We're 20% of the way through the 2011-2012 NHL season. Some of the early stories are getting a little bit old, you know? I mean, Sidney Crosby's still out. Roberto Luongo struggled through October but turned it on in November, so the Canucks as a team will probably have turned things around. And Brendan Shanahan is still handing out suspensions on a more consistent basis than his predecessor. But what everybody seems to want to talk about right now is a game that happened between the Philadelphia Flyers and the Tampa Bay Lightning this week. Today on Pucked in the Head, we talk about possible solutions for what seems to be a bit of retro trap action going on at the St. Pete Times Forum. As the theme music fades into the background, we can only assume that somewhere there's a Tesla coil that's bursting with energy, showing us lightning strike after lightning strike after lightning strike. Wouldn't it be great if that was going on like 5, 6, 7, 8 times a game?
I think it would, Jason. And unfortunately, that hasn't really been the case yet this year. Let me throw a couple of numbers at you.
Sure.
Immediately before the lockout, the NHL...
Sorry, can I interrupt? You're talking about the 1994 lockout that shortened... the 1995 lockout? Or the 2000... Which one are you talking about?
I'm talking about the 2003 lockout that everybody who isn't an old fart like you still remembers. In that lockout...
Which lockout?
The most recent lockout.
The NBA lockout? Was it the NFL lockout?
In the year immediately preceding the 2003 NHL lockout, you dink. Average of 5.14 goals per game.
In the NHL.
In the NHL.
Right.
That was the lowest goal total since the 1956 NHL season.
Wow.
Immediately post 2003 NHL lockout, you dink.
Yes.
That goal total jumped to 6.17.
Wow. Big difference.
It's been on a steady decline ever since, and we are now at the lowest total. We're at right around 5.5 goals per game since the lockout. Teams are figuring out how to stifle in this new rule set that the NHL has implemented. And it came to a head this week when Peter Laviolette told his Philadelphia Flyers, if they're going to play the 1-3-1 neutral zone trap.
They being the Tampa Bay Lightning.
The Tampa Bay Lightning. Don't advance the puck. Force them to come in and forecheck before you do anything with the puck.
And I think it was Kimmo Timonen, I believe.
I think it was.
Had just stood on his own faceoff dot with the puck on his stick, did not move. His defense partner did not move.
It was bizarre.
And forwards for both teams were lined up 3 abreast at center ice. And Tampa's lone other defenseman stood between the faceoff dots in his own zone. So it was a perfect, it was as if they had frozen mid-game. But it wasn't frozen. This was like 30 seconds of just not moving during play.
And then there were several other instances during the game where the Flyers just hung back in their own zone, passed the puck back and forth, and didn't do anything with it.
And the referees each time warned the Flyers to move the puck.
Well, the first two times that it happened, the referees blew the play dead because the puck wasn't moving. You have to keep the puck moving. And after that, the Flyers made a small change to their tactic and started just playing catch with it in the Tampa zone. Nothing wrong with that. And the play stayed alive until such time as Tampa entered the zone. And then Philadelphia would try and advance the puck.
Now, in this particular game, Tampa actually ended up winning the game 2-1.
They did.
Both of these teams have substantial offensive weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Look at some of the players that Tampa has on their roster.
Oh, yeah. You got LeCavalier. You've got St. Louis. You've got Stamkos. You've got Purcell, who's been doing quite well.
And you've got the ghost of Brad Richards, who still scores about 10 goals a year in Tampa.
And then on the other team, you got Danny Briere. You've got Pronger at the point.
Claude Giroux.
You know, this should have been knocked down, drag out, toe-to-toe offensive affair.
Or at least a decent skating game.
Yeah.
At the very least.
And it was not. And so we're going to talk a little bit about some possible solutions.
Well, first of all, I'd like to talk about the actual event. Now, some people are blaming Peter Laviolette, saying that because he instructed his team not to advance the puck, that he is to blame for this slowdown during the game proper.
Right.
And they're blaming Peter Laviolette for not competing. The spirit of the game is to move the puck forward in an aggressive, attacking manner. And they're saying that Peter Laviolette is to blame for the stoppage. Other people, such as Mike Milbury and myself, for example, and of course, I'm now putting myself in the same boat as the mad bastard who signed Alexei Yashin to that crazy contract, that it's actually Guy Boucher, the coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning, who is playing a stifling, boring style. And all Peter Laviolette and the Flyers have done is slowed it down during a game to actually demonstrate to the league, look what these guys are doing. Now, I mean, what do you think? Is it a problem to play a 1-3-1?
I think it is. Because the more successful you are with such a system, the more other teams will try and adopt it.
So what? What's wrong with having a good defense? If a football team
There is nothing wrong with having a good defense. There is something wrong with having a defensive system that permeates the game that slows things down and makes it boring to watch. We saw this in the 1990s with Jacques Lemaire's neutral zone trap.
In New Jersey, and then later
Minnesota.
In Minnesota. It still lives in Minnesota.
Yeah, not as bad as it was, but yes, it does. It is a cancer, and the NHL, I think, should be doing everything it can to get boring systems hockey out of the game.
So basically, you would agree then that this is not a problem. What Laviolette did is kosher. This happened. If you look at the clip on YouTube, and we'll put a link to the clip on YouTube. That's in the first minute of play.
Mm-hmm.
So this was not something that came about during the course of the game. This was premeditated. They drew this up at practice and they said, this is what you're going to do. As soon as they put the 1-3-1 on the ice, this is what you do.
We've seen how damaging it can be to the sport when everybody is playing the trap.
Okay, so way back, like you're talking about me being old, okay? Like I'm talking mid-career for Mario Lemieux.
Mm-hmm.
He retired prematurely, calling the NHL a garage league because there were so many sticks in his belly and so many different clutching and grabbing and everything else going through the neutral zone that he couldn't get any speed up. And he just said, I don't want to play in a garage league. And this was at the height of Jacques Lemaire's New Jersey Devils success.
Right.
The NHL did everything in their power, spent tons of man hours on this, researching ways to discourage that kind of defense, the neutral zone trap and the clutch and grab. They introduced new penalties and giving referees less discretion over when they could call a clutch or a grab or a stick in the midsection. We almost don't see hooking anymore.
Yeah, this is when we saw the obstruction hooking.
The obstruction holding.
Yeah.
I mean, if you watch games in the 60s and 70s, you get guys who are pretty much like they would caboose on guy. They'd put a stick in the belly and hold it tight and not even skate. They'd let the other guy pull him down the ice. and you saw guys getting pitchforked, can openered, and everything else, no call. So this was the introduction of the obstruction rule, all based on the neutral zone trap, because it was hindering guys like Mario Lemieux from doing their job.
Right.
We look at the most recent set of headshot rules, basically came into being because we're without Sidney Crosby for a year.
Yeah.
Do we think that one game of Peter Laviolette holding back and holding up a big magnifying glass upon Guy Boucher's 1-3-1, is this enough for the NHL to do something about it?
No. But that's why I mentioned the trend earlier. We are seeing a decline in goals per game. The headway that the NHL made post-lockout is almost extinct. I mean, over half of the goals per game increase that they saw after the lockout has been wiped out.
Okay. So what are you proposing then? Like, what are some things that you think are possible?
Illegal defense is one thing that that people have proposed. One of the more common permutations that people throw out there is to have no more than one person allowed to be skating backwards through the neutral zone.
That is an absolutely ridiculous idea. First of all, it's almost impossible to enforce. If I start skating backwards in a defensive role, how can I possibly know if someone behind me is also skating backwards? That's an almost impossible rule to enforce.
Okay, but you could tweak it to say that you know, situations where you have players skating backwards lined up, like Tampa Bay did with the three across, are illegal. But if you get to within, say, a certain radius of a player, that you're allowed to skate backwards for the purpose of taking him off the puck.
So, again,
The concept of an illegal
defense. Who's going
defense
to call that? I mean, the linesmen and the referees are already looking for so many things.
That's true.
How could you possibly work that in to a fluid, moving game? This is not something where we snap the ball and the ball's only in play for 10 seconds. It's a fluid, organic, moving game that is incredibly fast-paced.
Like, the referees know the game inside out. They can recognize when a team is playing a neutral zone trap.
Half the time, they miss when a team has too many players on the ice. It's just, it's such a difficult call to make on a consistent basis.
Okay.
That I don't think that is something that would work.
Okay. Second proposal, also drawing this from basketball, is to put the onus on the attacking team.
The team with the puck.
The team with the puck. This is from the camp that says the Flyers were the ones in the wrong.
Right.
For not advancing.
Well, and this was my next question, is who is responsible here? Is Tampa responsible for forechecking, or is Philadelphia responsible for trying to break the trap, basically? Because how many times have we seen a team take a lead and then they hang back?
I'll give you my opinion here. I don't think that either team was at fault this week. I think that Philadelphia had the right to not play the puck if Tampa is going to hang back. I think Philadelphia has the right in Tampa's building to bore the fans stupid until Tampa breaks their system. I also think Tampa, if they so choose, has the right to play that system under the rules.
Interesting. So you're basically, you don't blame anyone. You just say it was boring as hell for boredom's sake.
Yes, and I think that there should be a change because of how boring it was.
But how can you make a change if no one's at fault? Like, we need to determine.
Okay, well, nobody
who's
is at
fault.
All right, nobody is at fault under the rules as they stand today. I think Tampa Bay is at fault for playing the system that they're playing.
So, okay, let's look at the spirit of the game. What do you think is more important? winning games or entertaining people? Because we've got pundits on both sides of the equation here, right? One thing you mentioned in your blog post is the fact that Mike Milbury on the NHL on NBC broadcast actually sounded like a human being for once and made a very good point that this is supposed to be entertainment.
Yeah.
Teams like Tampa playing that way, teams like Minnesota suck the life out of the game. Teams like Nashville, these are not teams that are based on entertaining people. They're based on, we have a mediocre roster. How could we possibly win some games?
Yeah, I tend to agree with it being entertainment. I think that we've seen teams win lots of games playing boring hockey, and they're awful to watch. Whereas teams playing entertaining hockey, even if you hate them, you know, it's still fun to watch a Red Wings game. It's still fun to watch a Pittsburgh game.
So basically, you're saying that the NHL needs to make a change that will mandate teams to take entertainment into account as opposed to just winning games by any means necessary.
That's right. And that is actually a perfect lead-in. I'm going to change the order I drop these suggestions.
Okay.
It's a perfect lead-in to one that's a little more off the wall. In rugby, there are incentives built into the standing for playing a certain way.
That's right. So I remember at the Rugby World Cup recently, teams were awarded an extra point in the standings if they scored 4 or more tries in a single match.
Correct.
Are you suggesting an extra point in the standings if you score 5 goals, for example?
Sure. Drop 5 on a team, get a point.
Actually, I kind of like that.
There's also a rumor going around that Major League Soccer next year is going to trial a 0-0 draw being worth no points.
Ooh, I like that.
Instead of 1 point.
So a 1-1 draw or a 2-2 draw or 4-4 or 5-5, whatever, would still be worth 1 point per team.
Yes.
But a 0-0 draw...
Nobody scored.
Nobody scores, so nobody gets a point.
Yeah.
Ooh. That might actually bring some more people into the North American soccer fan market.
It's interesting, isn't it?
That is interesting. I like that. I already like the fact that if you win in regulation in soccer, you get 3 points.
Yeah.
I like that, as opposed to 1 point for a draw.
That's a different debate, whether or not the NHL should have 3 points for a win. But.
True enough, and I'm not necessarily talking about the shootout loss or the overtime loss part. I simply mean that a win should be worth considerably more than a draw, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
So we've hit on one that you like.
I like that idea of having some kind of statistical reward for scoring 5 goals in a game. Now, this is an interesting question, however, that arises from that. Recently, there was a game between the Winnipeg Jets and those very same Philadelphia Flyers. The Winnipeg Jets won that game 9-8.
Mm-hmm.
Under the proposed, or under your proposal that you're talking about right now, would that mean that each team would get, or that Winnipeg would have received 3 points, 2 for the win and 1 for goals scored, and that the Philadelphia Flyers would also have received a bonus point for scoring more than 5 goals?
Yes.
So if you score 5 goals in a losing cause...
You still get a point.
You get a point.
The point is to reward attacking hockey.
Right.
Not necessarily winning hockey.
So what you're saying is that if my team is losing 9-4 in the late stages of the game, I should pull the goalie.
Ooh, interesting. I suppose I am saying that.
I like it. Official pucked in the head seal of approval right there. Bing!
There was another bonus point available in rugby, and I'm not sure whether I like it as much. It rewarded close games. So if you lost, but you lost by less than a certain amount, you got a point in the standings as well. Now, the NHL already kind of does this because
if you lose
in the overtime and the shootout, then you...
Yeah, they already give the loser, or as I like to call it, the Bettman point. But loser and Bettman are the same thing, so there you go.
If you're on the other side of this debate and you think that the Philadelphia Flyers were at fault,
right?
The suggestion has been bandied about that the NHL should try a shot clock or a variation of the shot clock.
So if I have possession of the puck, I need to cross the center line.
Cross the center line
or
enter the attacking zone, whatever.
That's assuming that I have possession of the puck the entire time.
Right.
So if there's back and forth play in the neutral zone, just like in basketball, each time the puck changes possession, then the possession arrow would change and the shot clock would be refreshed. So it wouldn't be a shot clock per se. Because you'll have minutes at a time where a team might have possession, but they don't get a shot on goal.
It would be more analogous to the
over and back rule.
The 10-second rule. I guess it's the 8-second rule in the NBA now, where you have 8 seconds that bring the ball out of your backcourt.
That's an interesting one. I don't necessarily see a problem with that. Again, the game is so different from basketball. I just don't know how easy that transition would be. I'd have to see it like in the AHL or something. They'd have to pilot that rule somewhere else. Has any hockey league tried that you know of?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay, interesting. It's an interesting idea. I'll have to think about it. I'm not sure how I feel about that one.
I don't particularly like it because, as I said, I think it rewards teams for playing defensive hockey.
Yes, agreed. I'm torn on this. I think, I do agree with you somewhat that the onus needs to be on the puck carrier. The spirit of the game is that you should try to attack and that no matter what the defense is doing, you should be moving forward. On the other hand, I've watched so many crappy games where just these awful teams have been coached well. A team that actually sticks to a 1-3-1, when you've got guys like Saint-Louis and Stamkos and LeCavalier who are willing to actually follow their instructions and play a 1-3-1, that is excellent coaching. That's outstanding coaching. But I don't go to see the coaching.
And this is something I think you've mentioned to me in the past. One last suggestion, get the coaches out of there.
In what way? What do you mean?
Get the coaches out from behind the bench so that they're not actively coaching their teams during the game.
Like all of the coaches?
Sure.
You said your other suggestion was off the wall. That's some crazy talk, my friend. So you're basically suggesting that the inmates really rule the asylum here.
Yeah. Let the players play. Now, if the coach wants to call a timeout, then
he has to come down from the rafters and meet the guys?
Yeah.
What's he going to do? Text somebody on the bench and say, next stoppage in play?
Here's what you got to do.
I don't know, man. Let's have a compromise here. How about we go back to the old days when you had one coach behind the bench? You had a head coach who would be there to call line combinations, right?
Sure.
It would be there to pull the goalie and do those kinds of decisions. But leave the defensive coordinator and the specialty coaches away from the bench.
So you can have a trainer, an equipment guy, and a head coach.
Well, and see, there's your thing. I mean, how difficult would it be for somebody to put the assistant coach behind the bench in a trainer's outfit?
Well, I guess if Newell Brown would deign to throw on a tracksuit and hand out sticks, I guess that's his business. But
I don't know. Do the coaches don't have a union, I guess, eh? There's a players union, there's a refs union, but those guys are management, right?
I think so.
I don't know how many of if there is a coaches union, I don't think they go for that. I mean, you're reducing the percentage of jobs by like 40% to 80% there, depending on which team you're talking about.
I'm just throwing it out there.
Huh. Eliminate the coaches, huh? Well, we talked about this before. We would have loved it if they had done that at the All-Star game.
Yes. That's right. That's where I remember it from.
And don't don't pick the teams 3 days ahead of time and give them a chance to implement systems.
Yeah, just throw the sticks in and
throw the sticks in the middle of, in the middle of the ice and pick teams, throw jerseys on with whatever numbers, and let the players decide. I think that would be a fabulous All-Star game. I don't know if watching 82 games of shinny is really what I want to see in the NHL.
I don't think it would necessarily be shinny. The coaches don't need to be gone. I'm just suggesting that they're not behind the bench at all times.
I can't think of a sporting equivalent to that.
We're blazing trails here at Pucked in the Head.
Yeah, I think you're blazing something else, man, with that one. I can't go along with that one.
All right. Well, it was an interesting discussion nonetheless.
Thanks for bringing up the topic, Chris. It was an interesting one, certainly a different thing than we've talked about before. And it was thoughtful. I actually enjoyed. I was using my brain.
Wow.
During this podcast.
There's a first time for everything.
Man, I'm not sure. I think I need some Advil.
All right. Well, you go get some, Jason. Take care.
All right. Thanks very much. You will now hear Time for a Change by the Orchid Highway, of course, inspired by Tampa Bay Lightning hockey. Time for a Change.
Let me speak plain. I've got to sit and wait for my mouth to catch up to my brain. Time is spinning clockwise down the drain. Come back to me soon, because I'll soon be out of range. I'm feeling able as Cain. I only take these for pain. Broke out of rehab just like Ahab in that book by Mark Twain. Don't you worry, I'll see you back here again. I don't mean to complain, but it's familiar terrain. I'm firing melon balls from cannons on the Spanish Main, but I'm alright. It's just a red wine stain. It's all too normal now, where once it seemed so strange. Time for a construction crane, and I'm tearing up the rules to the game. Now the moon's on the wane, I'm feeling slightly more sane. I'm riding shotgun with my stomach, and we're ready for fame. But I'm losing my grip on the reins. It's all too normal now, and once it seemed so strange. Time for time for a change.
and Tampa Bay, the Tampa Bay Lightning, about whom we're going to speak, ended up coming in and winning a cup. That's not true. They won in 2005.
That is really not true.
But in 1990...
Actually, I think they won the year before the most recent lockout.
Yes, you are right. I just am mixing up the lockouts. So let's just edit all that shit right out.
Yeah, we'll see about that.